Well, hello, hello, hello. Here's another episode with Marlanka reading Sri Aurobindo's Synthesis of Yoga. Even for those whose first natural movement is a consecration, a surrender, and a resultant entire transformation of the thinking mind and its knowledge, or a total consecration, surrender, and transformation of the heart and its emotions, the consecration of works is a needed element in that change. Otherwise, although they may find God in outer life, they will not be able to fulfill the divine in life. Life for them will be a meaningless, undivine inconsequence. Not for them the true victory that shall be the key to the riddle of our terrestrial existence. Their love will not be the absolute love triumphant over self. Their knowledge will not be the total consciousness and the all-embracing knowledge. It is possible indeed to begin with knowledge or Godward emotion solely or with both together, and to leave works for the final movement of the yoga. But there is then this disadvantage that we may tend to live too exclusively within, subtilized in subjective experience, shut off in our isolated inner parts. There we may get encrusted in our spiritual seclusion and find it difficult later on to pour ourselves triumphantly outwards and apply to life our gains in the higher nature. When we turn to add this external kingdom also to our inner conquest, we shall find ourselves too much accustomed to an activity purely subjective and ineffective on the material plane. There will be an immense difficulty in transforming the outer life and the body. Or we shall find that our action does not correspond with the inner light. It still follows the old, accustomed, mistaken paths, still obeys the old, normal, imperfect influences. The truth within us continues to be separated by a painful gulf from the ignorant mechanism of our external nature. This is a frequent experience, because in such a process, the light and power come to be self-contained and unwilling to express themselves in life, or to use the physical means prescribed for the earth and her processes. It's as if we were living in another, larger and subtler world and had no divine hold, perhaps a little hole of any kind, upon the material and terrestrial existence. But still, each one must follow his nature. And there are always difficulties that have to be accepted for some time if we are to pursue our natural path of yoga. Yoga is, after all, primarily a change of the inner consciousness and nature. And if the balance of our parts is such that this must be done first with an initial exclusiveness and the rest left for later handling, we must accept the apparent imperfection of the process. Yet would the ideal working of an integral yoga be a movement, even from the beginning, integral in its process and whole and many-sided in its progress. In any case, our present preoccupation is with a yoga, integral in its aim and complete movement, but starting from works and proceeding by works, although at each step more and more moved by a vivifying divine love and more illumined by helping divine knowledge. The greatest gospel of spiritual works ever yet given to the race The most perfect system of karma yoga known to man in the past is to be found in the Bhagavad Gita. In that famous episode of the Mahabharata, the great basic lines of karma yoga are laid down for all time with an incomparable mastery and the infallible eye of an assured experience. It is true that the path alone, as the ancients saw it, is worked out fully. The perfect fulfillment, the highest secret, is hinted rather than developed. It is kept back as an unexpressed part of a supreme mystery. There are obvious reasons for this reticence, for the fulfillment is, in any case, a matter for experience, and no teaching can express it. It cannot be described in a way that can really be understood by a mind that has not the effulgent, transmuting experience. And for the soul that has passed the shining portals and stands in the blaze of the inner light, all mental and verbal description is as poor as it is superfluous, inadequate, and an impertinence. All divine consummations have perforce to be figured by us in the inapt and deceptive terms of a language which was made to fit the normal experience of mental man. But so expressed, they can be rightly understood only by those who already know, and knowing are able to give these poor external terms a changed, inner, and transfigured sense. As the Vedic rishis insisted in the beginning, the words of the supreme wisdom are expressive only to those who are already of the wise. The Gita, at its cryptic close, may seem by its silence to stop short of that solution for which we are seeking. It pauses at the borders of the highest spiritual mind and does not cross them into the splendors of the supramental light. And yet, its secret of dynamic and not only static identity with the inner presence, its highest mystery of absolute surrender to the divine guide, Lord, and inhabitant of our nature, that is the central secret. This surrender is the indispensable means of the supramental change, and again, it is through the supramental change that the dynamic identity becomes possible. What then are the lines of karma yoga laid down by the Gita? Its key principle, its spiritual method, can be summed up as the union of two largest and highest states or powers of consciousness, equality and oneness. The kernel of its method is an unreserved acceptance of the divine in our life, as in our inner self and spirit. An inner renunciation of personal desire leads to equality, accomplishes our total surrender to the divine, supports a delivery from dividing ego, which brings us to oneness. But this must be a oneness in dynamic force, and not only in static peace or inactive beatitude. The Gita promises freedom for the spirit, even in the midst of works and the full energies of nature, if we accept subjection of our whole being to that which is higher than the separating and limiting ego. It proposes an integral dynamic activity founded on a still passivity, a largest possible action irrevocably based on an immobile calm is its secret. Free expression out of a supreme inward silence. All things here are the one. an indivisible, eternal, transcendent, and cosmic Brahman that is in its seeming divided in things and creatures, in seeming only. For in truth, it is always one and equal in all things and creatures, and division is only a phenomenon of the surface. Now, as long as we live in the ignorant seeming, we are the ego and are subject to the modes of nature. Enslaved to appearances, bound to the dualities, tossed between good and evil, sin and virtue, grief and joy, pain and pleasure, good fortune and ill fortune, success and failure, we follow helplessly the iron or guilt and iron round of the wheel of Maya. At best, we have only the poor relative freedom which by us is ignorantly called free will. But that is, at bottom, illusory, since it is the modes of nature that express themselves through our personal will. It is force of nature, grasping us, ungrasped by us, that determines what we shall will and how we shall will it. Nature, not an independent ego, chooses what object we shall seek, whether by reasoned will or unreflecting impulse, at any moment of our existence. If, on the contrary, we live in the unifying reality of the Brahman, then we go beyond the ego and overstep nature, for then we get back to our true self and become the spirit. In the spirit, we are above the impulsion of nature, superior to her modes and forces. Attaining to a perfect equality in the soul, mind, and heart, we realize our true self of oneness, one with all beings, one, too, with that which expresses itself in them and in all that we see and experience. This equality and this oneness are the indispensable twin foundation we must lay down for a divine being, a divine consciousness, a divine action. Not one with all, we are not spiritual, not divine. Not equal souled to all things, happenings, and creatures, we cannot see spiritually, cannot know divinely, and cannot feel divinely towards others. The Supreme Power, the One Eternal and Infinite, is equal to all things and to all beings. And because it is equal, it can act with an absolute wisdom according to the truth of its works and its force, and according to the truth of each thing and of every creature. This is also the only true freedom possible to man, a freedom which he cannot have unless he outgrows his mental separativeness and becomes the conscious soul in nature. The only free will in the world is the one divine will of which nature is the executrix, for she is the master and creator of all other wills. Human free will can be real in a sense, but like all things that belong to the modes of nature, it is only relatively real. The mind rides on in a swirl of natural forces, balances on a poise between several possibilities, inclines to one side or another, settles, and has the sense of choosing. But it does not see. It is not even dimly aware of the force behind that has determined its choice. It cannot see it because that force is something total and to our eyes indeterminate. At most, mind can only distinguish with an approach to clarity and precision some out of the complex variety of particular determinations by which this force works out her incalculable purposes. Partial itself, the mind rides on a part of the machine, unaware of 9/10 of its motor agencies in time and environment, unaware of its past preparation and future drift. But because it rides, it thinks that it is directing the machine. In a sense, it counts, for that clear inclination of the mind, which we call our will, that firm settling of the inclination which presents itself to us as a deliberate choice, is one of nature's most powerful determinants. But it is never independent and sole. Behind this petty instrumental action of the human will, there is something vast and powerful and eternal that oversees the trend of the inclination and presses on the turn of the will. There is a total truth in nature greater than our individual choice. And in this total truth, or even beyond and behind it, there's something that determines all results. Its presence and secret knowledge keep up steadily in the process of nature a dynamic, almost automatic perception of the right relations. We shall pause today at this point and continue in the next episode of Sri Aurobindo's Synthesis of Yoga. May these words penetrate darkness and offer light to those who hear. Marlanka signing off for today.
This is Auroville Radio. Voices from the City of Dome.